Welcome to episode 35 of Lost in Translation. Once again, not coming to you from our studios at WCTV in Wilmington, Mass. Coming to you live from Bentley University, third straight year making the NCAAs. We're joined by head coach C. White. Coach, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, psyched to be here. Thank you.
So I got to ask, because how many years total at Bentley between player, assistant, head coach? How many years have you been here total? Do you know?
20. If I add the player, probably 24, something like that.
Are you a Massachusetts native?
Yes, I'm born and raised in Westwood, 40 minutes south.
Okay. So there's a little bit of incentive to stick around, but it takes more than just, I'm from the state, so I'm going to stay there. Like, what's kept you that long?
Have you been on this campus before?
Yeah.
This place is something else, right? I mean, like, come on. This was a dream when I was growing up. This was a dream that I've always had, and I was 40 minutes, you know, away. So I would come to all the games. I would travel when they would play in New York. You know, the big St. Rose rivalry was great back then. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was my dream. And then you come on this campus and it's like, why would you go anywhere else? I mean, the academics, the facilities, the buildings, the campus, and then you add a nationally ranked basketball program. It doesn't get any better than this.
So please tell me about the transition. I mean, because you were here as a player and the assistant coaching, right? And then the head coaching. What were the major transitions you had to make mentally and emotionally? Because, you know, now you're probably dealing with people that you've played with or against at one point or another. You know, how do you make that transition into being, I'm not going to call them subordinates, but, you know, to having a position of power and relating with them?
Yeah, so going from a player to a coach, I was a volunteer my first year out. So that's a different transition, you know, people I played with, my friends. And you know, you have to be on the other side of the line now. You know, your team first is your coaching staff, and your teammates are still forever your family. Mm-hmm. But there's a line you don't cross. You know, you protect and you're, you know, all on board one unit with your coaching staff first, and then you relay that message to the team. And it's very, very different because you can't be doing hanging out in dorms and being, you know, teammates anymore. So that was a big transition, but amazing. Then going to an assistant coach full-time and then associate head coach, it was just really seamless with Coach Stevens. It was just really easy to work with her. And we were together for so many years, 20 plus years, that we didn't, like, we just knew exactly what the other was thinking. And there, we were able to eliminate a lot of extra talk and meetings because we just knew what we were doing and it just clicked. It was so seamless and it was so fun. But now this transition, this is the big one. This was the one where it's like, wow, it is very different being one seat over.
Yeah. Ooh,
it is not the same. I thought I had sleepless nights before.
Yeah.
I was going to ask about, you know, when you have that kind of relationship with, I unfortunately have talked to Bobby about it. You know, I played at a very high level of athletics. I got all the way up to having the opportunity to play professionally. And I can't think of a coach that I felt like was genuinely cared about me, you know, and was someone that I would want to spend any time with once I got done playing with them. And so you clearly did not have that relationship with your coach that you go and have this super long professional working under them, working beside them. The bond that was there, I can't imagine. And I've got to think it must have been so hard, even though our decision to retire, to sit in that big chair and feel like it's your chair now, and to sit in that head coach's office and feel like that's your office now, and not feel, I don't know, a sense of loneliness, a sense of something's missing here, a sense of how am I going to stack up to this person's legacy? Just like, what are all the feelings those first couple of years that go through you?
You nailed it. Those are all the feelings. It's something you think about every day. At first, I don't think I felt that she was fully ready. And I didn't think I felt that I was fully ready. You know, you never really feel ready. So, you know, you just think like, but everything's going so perfectly. Like, why would we change this? Mm-hmm. She's like, no, I'm ready. And you're ready. And this is what we're doing. And, you know, she's always just been so supportive. Like, you are ready. This is what we're doing. You are ready for this. And I was just like, well, if you change your mind, we could go right back to where we were because what we got was really working. So why would we mess with it?
No, that's it's amazing. I don't know if there are many players who have that relationship with their coaches and then continue to have it as their assistants. I mean, I think it's really tough because, you know, as a player, you don't know what you don't know. And now all of a sudden you see a different side of the coin as an assistant and you figure out, man, I've got just so much more to learn. So I guess my question would be, sitting in the office, did you keep the same desk and chair or did you get your own desk and chair?
Well, what happened was we had a new president. It was during COVID. So as soon as I realized what was going to happen that year, the COVID year hit, I couldn't have been more thankful that she wasn't sitting in the chair I was sitting. You don't have the career she had. You don't be the Hall of Famer she is. And then, can you play? No. Your season's canceled. Are we going to practice? No. That is not how she should have gone out. So there wasn't a day that went by that I wasn't like, thank goodness it's me. Mm-hmm. Like, I am so thankful she's not dealing with this stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I was made for this. I can be patient and we can, you know, make the most of it. But that is just not something she should have had to endure in her last year. Right. So that all worked out perfectly. Right. The relationship is still what it was then. You know,
That's awesome.
It turned from mentor, mentee, mm-hmm. best friend. We talk every day. If we don't talk every day, we talk every other day.
So it sounds to me as if you didn't just have, I think a lot of coaches are great communicators, but very few, and I'm talking about high level coaches, are great connectors. It sounds like that, and I'm assuming that this is your coaching style too, because you've received that from your coach. So you look to both communicate and connect with your team. And that's not an easy job. How do you go about doing that every day? Because I know you have sleepless nights.
Right. I think that's the best part of coaching is the connections and is the relationships. So I think as an assistant coach, one of the best things that I was, you know, good at is the bonding, the relationships, the trust, the forming mm-hmm. those, you know, relationships with each player. Each player's are very, very different. So you need to have that bond and that trust in those relationships with every single one of them. And just because you move over a chair doesn't mean you should know the in and out of your kids. Like, right. You know, I think that's a really, really important piece is the bonding. I don't care if you don't play. You're still one of my own. Mm-hmm. You know, like in fact, the bond and the relationship should even be closer with the ones that aren't taking the court right. because, you know, they need your time too. So right. I think that's the part that comes easy. I think that's the part that just is very natural for me is the relationship piece. And, you know, a lot of what I learned from her, besides the relationship piece and keeping that going, you're not just recruiting and spoiling these kids, you know, sending them mail. And that never goes away just because they're on your team. Mm-hmm. You continue mm-hmm. to be doing those things for your players. But also the organization and the communication. She was really good at things that I wasn't. And so every day I think, okay, I need to be better at this. You know, she was really great at this. I need to be a little bit better at this. And so she continues to motivate me every day to be better.
That was awesome.
How did you handle that COVID year, your first year you come in and it's just like, is there going to be a season? Is there not going to be a season? Can we practice? Can we not practice? How do you keep a team together and then you guys just kind of take the conference and the world by storm the next 3 years, making the NCAA each of those first 3 years on
sure.
the other side of COVID? How does that happen?
Perspective. We are able to be here. We're on this beautiful campus. We're able to go to class. This university had a plan in place. These kids were getting a fantastic education. They weren't missing a beat. They made it wonderful for this campus, all these students. They had it made, and they loved their freshman year. I kept meeting with our freshmen. How's it going? Loved it. It's perspective. People are sick, and people are dying, and we're worried about practice. Mm-hmm. And if our players can't have that kind of perspective, then they're not Bentley players.
You know, when you mention perspective, you've got players who come in as freshmen. And again, they said, I think the saying is the only thing good about a freshman is that they become sophomores, right? So now you're sitting, this is a COVID year, you've got freshmen coming in and you're adding perspective to kids who just don't know any better. No, and I guess communicating with them and connecting with them is going to be a little bit different because I'm sure they're probably more afraid of what's going on than a kid who has a little bit more perspective than them. Look, this is Bentley, and we're going to be great. How did you deal with your freshmen that year? I mean, what was the process? I mean, was it a little bit different than everyone else?
Yeah, I was worried. Fear factors is the big thing, like you said. You know, are they afraid? These freshmen were thrilled to not be taking classes in their basement. They were thrilled to be on a campus in this unbelievable library, in all these research labs, in their dorms. I mean, we made spaces everywhere. There were more tents outside for the educational purposes than you could have seen. People went under during COVID. Bentley thrived. Mm-hmm. I mean, what they thought of and their master plan, it became even better. They had an awesome freshman year. And I think the perspective for them was, I can get this year back.
Yeah.
So I'm learning. I'm playing every day. Jeez. We get to be here. We get to learn and practice every day. Sure, you take a couple of weeks off here and there when something spikes. But we get to do this. And then I get my year back.
Right.
What freshman doesn't want a redshirt year? I mean, it really was a gift.
So you talked about taking a step back that growing up. You went to the tournaments in New York. The Bentley was like, you were a Bentley basketball fanatic. Basketball clearly must have been a huge part of your life growing up. You know, I got into America East basketball after my dad had played out at UMass, and America East, small Division I compared to the A-10 back in the heyday. So it's like, you kind of have to have that passion for the sport to find the smaller conference team to follow. Just tell me about your relationship with basketball growing up. Where does that come from? And what part of that in your life was basketball as a kid, as a teen?
Sure. I mean, it's every memory I have as a kid. But I just wanted to be active. I played every sport, you name it, soccer, lacrosse. I played hockey. I just loved being active. But basketball is always my favorite. And I remember everyone telling me, you know, stick with hockey. You could get a scholarship. Like, you could be at BC. You know, why basketball? You know, stick with soccer. You're fast, you know. And it was just, the passion with basketball. And it wasn't in my cards because I was the smallest, skinniest, wimpiest kid on the floor every time I took the floor. What was I? Fast. I wasn't skilled. I was fast. Mm-hmm. So I just had to grind. And thankfully, my dad was in construction and we had a real life-size backboard in our basement. It was an 8-foot hoop. And nice. We had one layer of rug over cement and I got to play every single day. And my handle got really good because I could dribble every night, every day.
Yep.
And it was just really, really an awesome opportunity to be able to play in my basement every single day. And so it just became even more, you know, my big goal to play on my varsity high school team. And I grew up in Westwood and it's legendary, you know, Kathy Delaney Smith land and 60 years of not losing a Tri-Valley league. So basketball was the end all be all in Westwood. And then my dream became, I want to play at Bentley. And I also want to get a scholarship. And everyone was like, stick with hockey, stick with soccer, you're not good enough. And that just really drove me. And so I just, every single day, I just would grind to get better because I knew my skills weren't there. And then they took a chance on me and the rest is history.
So as a child, your dad created the court in the basement, okay. Carpet on top of cement. Any injuries?
No, just my socks. Every single pair of socks had holes like crazy.
So, you know, it's funny. I talk to Sam about it a lot, you know, with the prevalence of injuries that the kids are getting now, especially at young ages. Now, I heard you say that you played every sport that you possibly could. And now we've got the kids basically honing in on one sport and you end up getting more injuries. So now they're not getting the movement patterns that you get with different sports. What do you, when you recruit your players, I mean, do you look for multi-sport athletes or do you, I mean, is that a preference? Is it not a preference? Or are you just looking for good players?
Yeah, I haven't gotten that detailed in terms of like, I'm not recruiting players that only play basketball. Mm-hmm. I love athletes. Mm-hmm. It's really special when you get an athlete that you can then make a better basketball player.
Right.
But no, I'm not set on one or the other. I definitely love, you know, not only the versatility of being an athletic and playing different sports, but also the social. I want them to enjoy it. I want them to have fun. Sometimes we go and watch our players coming in next year, you know, their volleyball games. It's nice to see them smiling, giggling, and laughing on the court because they're so dialed in and focused and serious on the basketball court. So I really enjoy that they play other sports. by the time they become junior, senior, if they just, you know, specialize in basketball, I understand that too. I probably mm-hmm. want to do that myself. Mm-hmm. So I don't, you know, one or the other.
We've had some interesting conversations with Coach Joe Jones over at BU about what players can do to get him to recruit them and what players can do to get him to say, I don't want anything to do with that. What players' families can do, that there isn't a lot that families can do to get him to recruit their kids, but there's certainly things that families can do to get him to say it's not worth the headache. What are you looking for in a player? What is something that catches your eye? What are the kind of players you're looking to recruit?
Well, the first thing you notice is, you know, someone that's catching your eye and making you watch them on the court. That's a given. You know, you got to have skill. Mm-hmm. And you got to be able to be a difference maker where it's like, that kid could help us win championships. You know, not that kid could be on my team, but that kid could help us win championships because that's what you're coming here to do. Mm-hmm. I watch everything. I am very, very detailed and I watch everything. So if I see an attitude, I don't forget. If I watch somebody treat their little brother bad, I don't forget. If I see someone crying because they fouled out or they didn't, you know, get enough touches with their parents and walking in the parking lot back to their car, it's just not going to work for me. You know, it's all about being a great person, being such a good teammate, being so coachable. You can see that right away. And we've got such a long history of really great coaches that are friends with Coach Stevens that work and coach in all different levels of college mm-hmm. and high school around here. So when we go to tournaments, there's not a tournament that goes by that someone doesn't come up to me and say, hey, see, there's a Bentley kid on court five. Go check out number 12.
That is awesome.
Yeah, because they used to work our camps mm-hmm. and they know what we're looking for and they know exactly the kind of Bentley kid.
Wow.
So the question, I don't know if you're comfortable answering this or not. So you're married, you have a wife, you have a beautiful family. Does that impact you? Has that impacted you as a coach?
Yeah, I think, you know, I've just always been taught that, like, you know, you have to separate family and work. It's just like, you know, when you're at work, you got to be dialed in and you got to be completely. I think the older I get, the smarter I'm getting, where it's like, you know, I can have this healthy balance and my kids can be a big part of this without it distracting me. And what I really realized is perspective is real. Games end. And your kids still adore you. You know, you had a tough game, you had a tough night, and my twins have been at every home game. They don't miss a beat.
That's awesome.
They don't care if mom wins or loses. Well, my son does. He'll probably cry himself to sleep now. But it's special and it's wonderful. So perspective is great. But I think the best part of it is our players are so awesome. They are bringing my kids onto the court. They are bringing them. We took them on an away trip this year to St. Rose. And you would have thought I brought my kids to Disney World. They had so much fun. So it's really been nice to share my family with my family. And it's just been wonderful because the kids are just so great.
Are there ever times that you're like, I'm off work. I'm shutting off the phone. It's just family. So you're always.
Yeah.
So you're not one. Okay.
Yeah.
You mentioned St. Rose and the trip. It's a very interesting situation there with the school announcing that it's shutting down. I've known Will Brown for about 23 years, 24 years. What would you say just about having, number one, a longtime men's coach coming in and coaching a program that I think that there's many different feelings in women's basketball when men's coaches switch over. Plenty of the men's coaches switch over are not successful. Will had a lot of success in his 1 year. Just what would you say about that? And then also, what would you say from afar, a team gets that kind of news and they still are able to get in that large bid to the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, that was tough on all of us. You know, losing any team in our conference is really tough. A team shutting down, you know, and not existing anymore, that it just hurts. Mm-hmm. It hurts bad. And we're all really sad. And we're sad for the student athletes. You know, there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about those kids. And I'm sure he is working and grinding to get them all spots. And Lord knows everybody wants them. They're dynamite. He's done a wonderful job. And I love that they had him and they had the success that they're having. You know, everybody's sort of rooting for them if it's mm-hmm. not you, because, you know, these kids deserve an amazing year and they'll have a bright future no matter where they go. But it's really special what's being done. And it's a special team. Having a man come in that coaches men and then coaches women, I believe in the procedure of interviewing and the process. And I'm sure that they chose the best candidate, you know, it doesn't matter the gender. And so if you get a great coach that does right by his players, welcome. Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned the word perspective. I think it's an extremely important word, especially when you're in a head coach. I think every day your perspective changes. You know, I heard a wonderful story about a deep sea diver, and he was talking about how they take pictures underwater, and they've got to take this red lens with them so they can actually see the colors of the water. And what that said to me was that the deeper you go, you're going to need a different lens to see the beauty of the colors of the water. As you go deeper into your head coaching position, I mean, you know, so far, you know, has your perspective changed in many ways? Like each year you find out something different about yourself that you'd like to improve, or, you know, that would help your younger players understand a little bit more?
That's a great question. I mean, I think every day I'm trying to be better. I think mm-hmm. with each new year, I'm definitely trying to get better. You know, you got to be honest with yourself. What are you good at? Mm-hmm. And what aren't you? And so you have to improve those things. I'm just really a student of the game. I love learning. As soon as the season's over, I'm sitting in on someone else's practices. In the summer, we can't have our players on campus. You know, we don't run preseason workouts in the summer. Mm-hmm. So I'll head over to Northeastern or BC and Harvard mm-hmm. and learn, pick up on any nuggets I can. Yeah. I love learning and getting better. And so I think, you know, just being a student of the game, that just doesn't go away. Like Coach Stevens is the GOAT. And she literally would sit in on Waltham High's practice if they had one, and she had the day off because she could get some kind of nugget. So she was constantly educating herself and trying to get better. You know, this is good right now, but let's get better. And I think if it wasn't for that, you know, these banners wouldn't be hanging in this gym.
I think that's an amazing insight. You know, you say that even at your position of leadership, you're still looking to learn. Leaders always look to learn. That's great advice for anyone who's listening to this podcast. Thank you.
So you've been here for a real long time. You've only been a head coach for a short time. You've had a lot of success in a short time. Highest seed that you guys have had since you've been the head coach, 3 straight NCAAs. I've got to think, were you interested, there would be Division I schools that would come calling based on your career. I also understand the history you have here, the attachment you have here, and there are all different types of people who do things. I think most people in the coaching world are looking for, let me see how high I can get. Mm-hmm. I also think I've seen, we've talked to Gene Bain at Brandeis, their men's coach, that people don't realize how good you can have it as a Division II or a Division III coach in the right spot. That you get a little bit more freedom, a little bit more U time, not that you're ever off, a little bit less pressure. I think you can escape with your morals intact as a Division II and a Division III coach in a way that some Division I coaches make compromises when they get to that level. So the only thing I'm trying to say is, like, I see the pros and the cons, because obviously the money, the exposure, if you were to go D1, is that a thought that, I'm not saying where you're at right now, but when you got on this coaching train to begin with, were you thinking, I want to work my way to D1 as a head coach?
Nope.
Nope?
Nope. And it's just, this is a really special place. And it doesn't get better than this. I'm recruits that come in and they sit with me and I tell them, I will be here. You know, I'm born and raised. I literally bleed Bentley blue. It's never going to change. I'm not going to jump ship just to, the grass is greener. The grass is not greener. That's this right. Place is really special in so many ways. There's just not a better spot for me.
I got to ask before we go, just because she's someone from the town that we are based in. This podcast is about much, much more than Wilmington, but the studio that I run is not. Tell me a little bit about Kylie Ducharme. She was a 1,000 kid in high school, but from a small public school. Wilmington High is not a big school. The only 1,000 kid in school history. Comes here, doesn't play much for 2 years, and is now starting and giving you real big minutes. What would you just say about her as a kid and about her development? She said that she didn't think about transferring at all, and a lot of kids in the portal era would have. So just tell me about her a little bit.
Yeah, she's special for sure. I think it's how she was raised. She was raised by hardworking, amazing parents. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she enjoyed her role. Last year, I remember, this was the funniest story. She played limited minutes because she was behind, you know, two could be all Americans. Mm-hmm. And she loved her role. Like, what do you need me to do? I'll rebound. I'll get on the floor. And I remember she subbed in and she took a full court charge in her 2 minutes of play. And I remember her mom, who might be the funniest woman alive, was like, you know what? For an N10 championship, we'll break two ribs. That's a good play. And someone That's told awesome. Me, one of our alums told me that. She's like, I love Miss Ducharme. I love the whole family. But, you know, she's willing to do whatever it takes to win and for her teammates. And it's tough when you play for Bentley. It's tough when you're a freshman or a sophomore and you've got really good players around you. Mm-hmm. We say it all the time. We've got players on our bench that would be starting at other teams in our league. Right. We've got freshmen that would be on the rookie team. You know, every year you're like, why not me? And it's because you're surrounded by people. So it's hard. But what you have to do is you got to wait until it's your turn and you're going to get your call. And when you get your call, you want to make the most of it. Well, Kylie Ducharme is making the most of it. She has been playing out of her mind. Wow. We've always known it's in there. Like you said, 1,000. She is talented beyond talented, but when she got her turn, she took advantage of it and she's dominating for us. We're so proud of her.
That's awesome.
Well, Coach, we are really excited to see you this Friday. We will both be in attendance for this awesome. Friday's game.
Absolutely.
So best of luck and hoping for a long run.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you
so much for coming in.
Thank you.